This is the EPFR Exchange Podcast. All opinions expressed by Cam, Kirsten, or our podcast guests are solely of their own opinion and do not reflect the opinion of EPFR, part of a private equity Montague's portfolio of standalone companies. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for investment decisions.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the EPFR Exchange Podcast. I'm Kirsten Longbottom, and we have EPFR's Director of Research, Cameron Brandt, sharing his insight with our listeners again this week. We'll walk through major themes in the global financial landscape and how that plays a role in the data EPFR tracks. Cam, looking out at a pretty dreary weather out that window, and I feel there's a lot more investors were dreading as we headed into the latest reporting period. And maybe even as it closed out, we saw both bond and equity funds starting off the week receiving daily inflows and then took a turn for the worse towards the end of the reporting period. The ECB and Fed raised rates, with the latter slowing the level of increases, as generally opinion kind of expected. But are we seeing a pivot point coming anytime soon?
No, we're not, I don't think. And that was something that both of the major central banks made a point of trying to prepare investors for. Investors were certainly hoping to have their cake and eat it too, to see the rate of increase is slow and be given a pretty clear indication that the rollover point was near. Neither central bank felt comfortable doing that, especially in the case of the ECB, where inflation has come down quotation marks to 10%. they really would struggle to make the case for signaling a pivot point. In fact, they went in the other direction, which is they signaled that the thing they haven't yet done, which the Fed has been doing for a while, is running down their balance sheet, and they now say they're going to start doing that next year. So as you said, the flow pattern was sort of cautious optimism during the early part of the reporting period. And certainly on the fixed income side, most of the fund groups saw money move out on Wednesday. U.S. equity funds had sort of, you might almost call it a rush of blood to the head. They sort of jumped on the only 50 basis point hike. I suspect we're going to see a reaction over this coming week as people focus in more on the fact that, on the dot plot, some estimates at the moment of the terminal point are now around 5.5%. So more pain to come.
Yeah. We'll see how that plays out. I'm sure we'll give an update. Among other developed markets, you highlighted Japan, Europe, and the Frugal Five markets this week. Can you expand on those key takeaways?
Well, I highlighted the Frugal Five just because when you look at the changes in European regional fund allocations to countries over the past 2 years, of the countries that have picked up sort of allocation share in the average portfolio, 4 out of 5 are the Frugal Five markets. Austria was the only one that hasn't benefited from that. Europe remains mired in things that sap investor confidence, and we're now looking at the longest outflow streak that fund group has ever put together since we started tracking it back at the turn of the century. So a lot of money keeps grinding out there. And I think the ECB's limited room for maneuver means that it's probably going to continue to be a market that people err on the side of caution when they look at it. Big outflows from UK equity funds this week, which was a little surprising to me because their central bank has signaled that they think that they are quite close to the rollover point. But on the other hand, if you look at its current account deficit and the amount of portfolio capital it has to bring in to finance that deficit, I think markets may be, you know, sending a signal that they, you know, the bank can talk a good game, but that its hand may yet again get forced by circumstance.
Absolutely. The Dow Jones Industrial Average, you highlighted that today in the Global Navigator, that tracks 30 large publicly owned blue chip companies. And we saw it drop 0.6% during the reporting period and 700 points after it closed. Besides giving us a not so positive reading on the health of the U.S. economy, what are you expecting the reaction to be from this if we aren't seeing it already? I mean, do investors take that and say, is there going to be a recession soon?
Once the initial enthusiasm was over, the trend started to continue down as investors suddenly said, you know, whoops, you know, maybe we do need to price in. Or well, actually, I don't think it comes as a surprise. I think a lot of investors have been hoping that they wouldn't have to price in a recession after the latest increase and the sort of language the Fed used to describe its deliberations. I think more of them feel that they need to do that. You know, I personally think that the Dow Jones has another leg downward to go before it bottoms out. But on the other hand, I think we're definitely at the stage where people feel that, you know, that bottom is there somewhere and people don't want to miss it too much. So I think you'll definitely see periods of inflows, and then when fresh evidence to the contrary emerges, there'll be sort of another exodus.
Okay. I highlighted quite a few different factors weighing in on the sector front, and two are really impacting China. U.S. and U.K. export controls on China's chip sales keep chipping away at the tech sector, pun intended, and the COVID-19 restrictions easing met with outbreaks following after. Really just an overall view that growth will be hit hard. Do you think investors are seeing risk or opportunities with this dedicated fund group?
Well, it depends where that investor sits. I think for foreign investors, China remains fairly hard to read. And I think, you know, it will be a while before there's any meaningful move back in. Not so much that the fundamentals might not lead you that way, but the COVID battle that China's waged has certainly sort of shown that, you know, investor rights, especially non-Chinese investor rights, are very low down their list of priorities. So on the other hand, you know, we certainly saw some signs that domestic investors in China are gearing up to move back into, to increase their exposure to equity, which they have actually been steering money into more by default, just that most of the other available options were not looking terribly good. Also, because property, you know, is starting to get some official support. So all of a sudden, there are a couple of asset classes that look like they have some upside. We continue to see redemptions from bond funds, and that's sort of consistent with what Chinese bond market has been going through recently, as a lot of sort of domestic investors decide to liquidate assets they hold in that area so that they have money to deploy elsewhere. Interesting that you mentioned, you know, the semiconductor aspect in tech, and the sort of tension between the U.S. and China isn't the only thing at play there. You know, chips tend to have demand cycles which sort of wane in anticipation of the next generation, though in this case they're waning because there aren't quite as many things being produced now that demand them. And a couple of the country fund groups that are dedicated to markets which have a significant semiconductor story, which would be Korea and Taiwan, both of those had pretty significant outflows this past week.
Great. Well, thank you, Cam. I think we'll wrap it up on that one.
Well, actually, I had one question for you, which is that writing up the energy sector this week, you highlighted nuclear power and uranium funds, which I was certainly very interested in because, of course, there's been a lot of sometimes rather painful debate on whether the trade-off between the risks that nuclear power does pose from an environmental standpoint versus their undoubted ability to produce energy in a more climate-friendly way. That debate has been rattling along. Certainly, to some degree, the tide of public opinion swung back towards this. But what did you see in the flows once you'd isolated that grouping?
Yeah, so overall for energy sector funds, I guess I'll start there. They extended an outflow streak, and that fed into somewhat of nuclear and uranium funds. They saw a four-week outflow streak continue. But at the start of 2022, we did see a 17-week inflow streak. That was largely surrounding the time that Russia started its conflict with Ukraine. And I think sentiment has died down since then. But with the latest news and with the latest technology and breakthroughs that have come, I think in the months and maybe even decades ahead, uranium is definitely going to be a big influence in the market. Kind of big producers of uranium, Kazakhstan, Canada, Australia, and Russia, and countries that rely on nuclear power plants for electricity, like Lithuania, France, and Slovakia, could all be very positively impacted by this. But like you said, there are definitely environmental impacts and lots of nuclear waste that is a result of it. So there are pluses and minuses, but yeah, in the medical, industrial and defense spaces, I'm sure we'll see some positive.
Right. Some more appetite. Well, it will be interesting to see how that plays out. I imagine as the weather gets colder and we grind through this winter, there may be another spike or two in that particular subgroup of the energy sector funds we track.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. So what are you going to do now you're in the same frostbite zone as the rest of us?
That's a good question. Honestly, enjoying a lot of time with family and happy to kind of be in cold weather for a little while. It's a nice change. But we will catch up next week again and hopefully give some themes for 2023 that our listeners can follow.
Well, actually, we may spare you over the Christmas weekend, but we will resume battle just before New Year when, as Kirsten says, we'll polish up our somewhat grubby crystal ball and see what's what's announcing itself.
Exactly. All right, Cam, thank you so much.
Great.
Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to the EPFR Exchange Podcast. For more information or to suggest a topic for a future podcast, please visit epfr.buzzsprout.com or email us directly at epfrexchangepodcast@informa.com.